Welcome to the Paideia Education Podcast. This is Dr. Bernie Wilkinson. And today's podcast is the audio from a forum held here in Central Florida in Polk County that I had the opportunity to moderate this past week on June 21st, 2016. Now, the forum was composed of the candidates for the Polk County School Board positions that will be coming up for election near the end of August. In the podcast, you're going to hear the candidates asked various questions, and each of them will have the opportunity to respond to those questions. The audio isn't fantastic, but if you're interested in hearing what the candidates have to say about various topics and various issues, it is a great way to get caught up on their various positions and ideas. So bear with the audio a little bit. The information is fantastic, and I hope that you enjoy it. This podcast will also be posted as a video on YouTube so that you can pair the information with the actual candidate as he or she speaks. All right. Thanks so much for listening, and we hope that you enjoy it. But before we get to it, I want to make sure that I thank Dr. Wendy Bradshaw for inviting me to serve as the moderator for the forum. She and the Citizens for Better Educational Leadership are doing a wonderful job of getting information out so that we can all be more informed voters. So thank you, Dr. Bradshaw, and here's the forum.
All right, I think it's about time that we get started. We're running a little bit late, but hopefully everybody has a chair to sit in, and as we settle in for the next little while, hour and a half to 2 hours or so we can hear from our candidates tonight. I want to first welcome everyone. I'm Dr. Bernie Wilkinson, and I was graciously asked to moderate this forum. It's my first time ever actually moderating a forum, but I'm just as excited as you guys are to hear our candidates respond to some questions and discuss some of the hot topics that are certainly at play in this election. Just so that you guys know, we're recording the forum, and the plan is to have the audio available on a podcast, and potentially even hopefully have the video available on YouTube so that you can go back and look at it again, and other voters will be able to have access to it and see the discussions tonight so that everyone can be informed, and those who couldn't make it tonight will still have the information available to them. So we all know that the last few years has seen a lot of controversy and issues in our education system. And so, again, it's very exciting to have the opportunity to talk to our candidates, our school board candidates tonight in preparation for the upcoming election. Certainly, there are lots of movements going on nationally and even at the state level, but of course, this is great to have an opportunity here at the local level to talk with our candidates and see what's going to happen in our challenging district, our district that has been challenged a little bit with some of the testing and some of the things going on lately. So I'm going to begin by introducing our candidates very quickly so we can get right into the forum and get things going. Running for District 1 seat is Mr. William Townsend. There are two others running for District 1 seat who weren't able to make it tonight, Franklin Shoemaker, and the incumbent, Mr. Humberry. They weren't able to make it tonight. So welcome, Mr. Townsend, running for District 1 seat. Next, we kind of have it in sections. So the next four candidates are running for District 2 seat. So next to Mr. Townsend is Dr. Tim James. Followed by Mr. Kevin Kiddo, then the incumbent, Mr. Corey Cunningham, and Reverend Ronnie Clark. The last four here are running for District 4 seat, and we have Ms. Rebecca Troutman, followed by Ms. Sarah Reynolds, Mr. Edwin Smith, and then Ms. Rebecca Ricks. So let me tell a little bit how we're going to run the forum tonight, again with the goal of helping things progress so we can get everything in time. Over the past few weeks, the Citizens for Better Educational Leadership had a had a survey out on SurveyMonkey online, asking voters to what kinds of questions they would like to ask of their candidates. And so lots and lots and lots of questions have come in. Those questions have been sorted and aggregated into really four broad categories. And so the candidates have been provided those four broad categories, as well as some of the sub-questions that were asked very specifically so that during their assigned time, they'll be able to address as many of those issues and questions as they can. The way that we'll run it is I will begin by randomly drawing a name from the container here, and I'll ask the first question. That candidate will have 2 minutes to provide as much information as they would like over that two-minute time frame. Thereafter, each of the other candidates will have their 2 minutes to respond to the question directly themselves or to respond to the previous speakers. So there's we'll have lots of information, and the candidates will have the opportunity to interact with each other.
Mm-hmm. I realize I was the timer, and I don't have my timer. Oh,
thank you. All right. Once all the candidates have had the opportunity to respond to a particular question, we'll then move on to the next one, beginning with a random drawing of the person's name. Okay? Of course, again, to keep on schedule and everything, I do respectfully request that the candidates be cognizant of the two-minute time limit. You don't have to keep track of it in your mind. We'll keep track of it for you, but and try to gently remind you as the time comes. All right, with all that said, we will begin. So, let me draw first. So the first candidate we'll hear from is Dr. James. Here's the first question. On June 16th of this year, the Ledger published an article covering the school board budget priorities. In the article, there was a list of items needed by district staff totaling $18.9 million. This included a small 1% raise for school employees and support for schools struggling to meet their annual gains. With the fiscal belt becoming tighter every year, what do you see as the most pressing fiscal management challenges, and how will you address them?
Well, the first thing is definitely the support and the structure and the raises for our teachers. Without our teachers and without our staff members having the appropriate budget items, then we can't survive or let alone have our students be productive inside the educational arc and being productive members of society. As far as the financial budget area, I would focus more on the infrastructure. I would definitely focus more on the needs of what the principals request and not use budget items for rebranding or for technologies that are outside that box. We would have to make sure that we could keep in with educational items for our students. We would have to really push towards the learning cycles for our students. One of the things that I think for those financial management challenges is to see how we can peel some of the waste on the back end and push it towards the front end.
Thank you. Next, we'll go to Ms. Cunningham.
Okay, thank you. We currently, as school board members, have two roles and responsibilities. And one of those is to provide a balanced budget every year, as well as to approve and set the direction for policies for the school district. In the fiscal responsibility side, this past year, we have approved, in the year that we're currently in, a $1.3 billion budget. I'm very pleased to say that our state normally requires us to withhold 3% in our general fund balance in reserves, and the school board a few years ago made it a priority to increase that funding to 5%. So the 5% fund balance sits at about $35.6 million. Of that money, we continually look for ways and things that we can do with those reserves. So once again, it's not so much a 5% balance at the beginning of the fiscal year, which starts July 1, but to end that with June the 30th. And so we are trending right now to end this school year by June 30th, and we're hoping to be over 6%. So that will allocate extra dollars in our budget to do some creative things. First of all, we have growth issues, which I think most of us know. In my district too, northeast section of Polk County, we continue to grow. And as a result of that, we're going to be opening a new K-8 school, Citrus Ridge Academy, the Civics Academy, in August. It's going to be a K-8 school with a focus on leadership.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next, we'll go to Ms. Troutman.
On the same issue?
Yes.
You know, with what Ms. Cunningham just said about our budget, you hear that number and you think, oh my God, what are they doing sitting there with that amount of money? It seems like an enormous amount of money. When you consider that the Polk County school budget is equal to that of the entire Polk County budget run by our government. So it seems like a lot of money, but you must keep in mind that, as she said, we have to have that 3% reserve. We don't have any choice on that. I think we have to become efficient with the dollars that we have. And we have to look for ways to become efficient with that money. And I think part of that is asking for input from the people that are seeing dollars wasted, and maybe can come up with better ways. And some of that speaks to the communication that I feel needs to be heightened at all levels, not just from our teachers, but from our non-instructional staff, as well as from the community. I think at this time, it's wonderful to see the room filled with these people. That education is really starting to be a main topic, and to look to some of our business leaders about budgeting ideas, there is no doubt we're going to be in trouble this year. Our budget does not look good, and you know, everybody says, well, we've got to pay teachers more, and I think probably everybody in this room would raise their hand and say we want to pay teachers more. But I want to know who in this room wants to pay more taxes. And that's kind of the crux. And there are some people, some of our counties are doing that. Sarasota County continues to levy higher taxes that directly go to education. And there's going to be a vote soon to everybody in Polk County to look at that. And we really need to think about, where are we saying that we want to be taxed, and where do we want those taxes to go?
Thank you. Mr. Smith?
Yes, same issue.
Yes.
Yes.
Everyone will get up.
The first thing I want to say is, there's an old saying that if you think education is expensive, try it.
Yes.
The most important thing any society can do is to educate your young people, and we've got to educate our young people. The budget is $1.3 billion now for the school board. That's about the same county's budget, is $1.3 billion. I might add, when I first came on the county commission, the budget was $1.8 billion. So you can tell that the recession hit us hard. What are we going to do with that money? Well, number one, I think we've got to set the priorities. That's got to happen. And I think the school board is doing that. I don't know so much about the school board business. I say all day today I was in a county commission meeting trying to figure out what we're going to do. But, you know, you've got to have priorities. And just remember, the priority has got to be in that classroom. That's where it is. The teacher, the classroom, students. And everything is about that. We are support personnel. The school board is support personnel. Everybody that's not in that classroom is support personnel. And they've got to do what they need to do. Okay? We are supporting them. We are not going to teach students. Teachers are going to do that. The students have got to learn, and we've got to produce a good product. We need to be proud of our schools, be proud of our teachers, and the whole thing goes on making good decisions up and down the line. Now, one of the things that we've talked about before that is not glamorous at all is maintenance. We all know that PICO dollars have been scarce, and they've been getting scarcer. We need money to keep our schools up. Kids are not going to sit there in school and learn while the roof is leaking over their head, or there's no air conditioning in the school, etc. So we've got to take care of that today. Everything has got to be balanced, and I'll tell you what, it never fails the needs will accept, will exceed the funds available for them, always. We'll have more needs than we've got money. So we just have to be careful. We have to prioritize, but we've got to keep the student and the kids in mind. That's where it's all about.
Thank you very much. Mr. Townsend?
I would agree that maintenance is probably the most pressing issue we have now. In addition to that, the more I talk to people, the more I feel that ESC education and just general behavioral and special needs issues are enormously expensive and an enormously important problem that we face that money probably has the most impact on. Those would be my immediate two priorities, in addition, of course, to additional pay for teachers, always. But I think it's important to look at what's in that $18 million that was short. One of the things we're coming up with is $3.5 million to simply pay teachers because we fought them for 3.5 years because they got master's degrees and we didn't want to pay them because we're petty and silly. I think we had a school board attorney who pursued that crusade for 3 years, supported by the board, and now we have to pay $3.5 million to pay back teachers who had money they had earned for no reason whatsoever. Additionally, you know, how many of you guys here have heard of a thing called the LIIS computer service? I'll move it really quick. It's a very expensive, high-end computer system that is supposed to streamline testing student information. Capital Roy hired an unqualified vendor. Against recommendations, the school board approved it on the consent agenda 2 years ago. It failed completely and utterly. And one of the reasons why the testing problems we have today are the failure of that technology. Now, I've just found out today that there's a strategic technology plan being developed right now by a vendor that did not get an RFP, that was not vetted to my knowledge. I'm curious if Laura even knows about that. This strategic technology plan is supposed to be coming out soon. I'm just curious if you're aware of that.
Thanks, Billy.
All right, thank you. Next, we have Mr. Kidd.
I think we have problems as far as finances are concerned. And let me tell you folks, I don't believe in raising taxes. I don't believe in cutting teachers' salaries. So I think we've got to drive money to the classroom. That is one of my priorities. As far as facilities are concerned, I think we have to take a quick look at the facilities and really study it, because if you don't understand, you need to look at P3. Everybody should write down P3. Look on the computer and look at P3. State legislature have passed a law where you can now do public-private enterprise, meaning that the school can be built by a private enterprise and run by the school board, and the private enterprise maintains the school for 10, 15, 20 years. And I think that's going to be the way of the future, where the public-private enterprise will thrive in this state. If you look at the Polk Parkway that they try to extend to the east part, they're looking at doing a public-private enterprise because the government has no money. So I think that's where you're going to find money from public-private partnerships to build new schools. The other thing is you need to look at is impact fees. If you understand the impact fee study, the county commission voted to only pass a percentage of that. And all these new houses that are being built, they're paying $3,000 or $4,000. They should be paying $7,000 as an impact fee for the school. And we've cut it in half. The other thing that we need to look at, and it's coming up next year, is the sales tax. And the sales tax was designed to be for new school development, etc. I was on the committee to begin with, and it was unfortunate that when I first got on the committee, George Jenkins High School, air conditioner. School board didn't have the money to replace that air conditioner. It came out of the sales tax. That air conditioner was $10 million. I don't think people realize that the expense of maintaining the school. And the school board is not going to put more money into obsolete schools. It's just putting good money after bad. So there's a lot of things to facilitate.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Reverend Clark.
Okay. We know that in our school funding that we're still not at the level in our FPFP of 2008. We're still underfunded now. And so if we're not at that level, we're not getting any PICO dollars for new schools. And we only get about $2 million PICO dollars to do maintenance with. So it is incumbent upon the board that we make the wisest decisions that we can with the money that's at hand. And that we've not done repeatedly in the past. Prime example with this council statement, we talk about the local construction improvement system. Now that system was, we had vendors came and presented to it that had functioned the system. Our school board took the advice of the superintendent and we bought a system that was not functioning, that was put together by people who had did medical but not educational. That system did not work. We had about tests for that system that didn't work that cost $340,000. They didn't even have the audacity to bring it back to the citizens and let them know the money that we wasted with that system. We have to make good, sound choices with the dollars that we do have. The state required us to carry 3% in reserves. And we are celebrating that we have almost 6% in reserves. While we don't fully staff our classrooms, we've got long-term subs sitting in the classroom who are doing a disservice to our students because we're cutting money when we're above what the state requires. And I'm not saying don't have extra reserve, but we should never, never leave the classroom vacant and not fully staff with teachers when we have the resources to carry it out. So we have to make sound, rational decisions with the resources that we have at hand. And we've not done that. And so if we're going to make a change, we're going to have to start taking and prioritizing every expenditure that we do. And we're going to begin to understand that sometimes consultants don't know everything. This district loves consultants. We spend many thousands of dollars on consultants. I think the reason why that is because the school board members believe that they're advisors. Nobody can pay you $40,000 to be advisors. We need to do the work, do the research, and put the money where it needs to go.
Thank you very much. Ms. Brooks?
I'm going to pick up kind of where you left off on the consultants. We have three resources in our classrooms with teachers, and they're experts in their field. We should be consulting them on where is the money best spent, where do we want to put our dollars, where do you need, what supplies do you need for your classroom, what curriculum's working. As far as new curriculum, we keep changing curriculum, but we don't fully implement it. So if we're not implementing the curriculum correctly, how do we know if it's working or not? You know, we need to be not just buying this great curriculum, but also doing training with it, keeping it up, not just saying, okay, here it is, here's three links to a website that, you know, go teach yourself. Everybody's doing different things, nobody's on the same page. Also, another interesting question that was kind of one of the one-liners that they gave us was how do we get to revamp these older schools? Alachua County has a really cool program where they partnered with University of Florida in Santa Fe. We have so many colleges in Polk County that we can make use of. It's Project Makeover. It's kind of like Extreme Home Makeover, but they pick one school a year and go in and completely redo the school. So they redo a playground or, you know, remulch everything. They go into the library and make it Dr. Seuss themed and have inspirational quotes on the wall. They go into a science lab and have the measurement man painted on the wall and a wave with different parts labeled. And they work with Home Depot and Lowe's and all of these companies that every year they have all of the supplies completely paid for, and then it's students that are going through and you're making your college students invested in their community, which is awesome. You need to have the community be stakeholders.
Great, thank you very much. Ms. Ritz.
Yeah. I feel like I'm like in line for a ride at Disney World. I'm like, I'm ready. Okay, so as to the budget, you know, we have 96,300 students in our schools. So if you divide that up to the budget, we get about $10,000 a student, all right? And so when I measured that out, that's about $900 a month that we do per student. If you compare that to a private school, the most inexpensive private school in our county
is for a K through 12, 12th grade high school student for a certified school with certified teachers, accredited school. The most inexpensive one is $390 a month. The average pay for a private school is $600 a month. Our county is paying almost double that a month for public school. So if a private school can do it for much cheaper, our county can do it for much cheaper. So there's obviously a lot of waste. If you have that much waste, if you have that much money between the chicken and the hair. So I think that what you need to do, and I agree with the people who are talking about consultants. You know, somebody said before, Polk County's never found a consultant they didn't love. So we do need to go back and consult with the people where the waste is taking place. Teachers know, principals know, we all see. And upkeep of our buildings is very, very, very important. But we can't overlook what the main purpose of the school board is, what the main purpose is to educate our students. If we are not going and looking at that, if they don't have a place to be educated, that is counterproductive. Not only with the curriculums and the things that we look at, we need to go all the way back to the beginning and look at our basis and see what we have that we need to, that where we can trim from.
Fantastic. All right, thank you. All right, now we'll move on to, everybody went right? So we'll move on to our next question. Please choose. Reverend Clark will begin this one. All right. So the question. One of the most controversial aspects of education at this time revolves around standardized testing. And while some of the tests, such as the FSA and the various EOCs, are state mandated, other forms of assessment, such as the end of year exams, have others that have developed other than the school district or other than the state. And it also leads the district to create, administer, and evaluate those tests. Again, the use of these tests have been very controversial, to say the least. What is your stance on district-mandated testing policies?
My stance on district-mandated testing policies? I was in Tallahassee fighting for civil citation program with the legislature. While I was there was also a bill on the floor of the Senate and the House, recommended reduced tests in the state of Florida. We have enough mandate coming down from the state. And then when we put more mandates that's coming from the district, it really does put our teachers and our students in a situation where they feel like they're being tested into oblivion. After the FSA was over with, we had another full month of just testing, just about every day in the classroom. Most of you may not even know that. The teachers are frustrated. They feel like they're in an environment where they can't be creative because they got to continue to prepare to test. We need to let them be creative, let them do what they need to do. We have enough mandate coming down from above. We only need to add on top of those mandates. I know there are some requirements for monitoring, but still, even after the monitoring test, we still have other tests that are mandated by the school district. And I think we need to change that. I served as a counselor in the school district. And I know what it's like for a child who's challenged and can't meet the criteria. And now they get to the point where they're frustrated. They begin to act out. If they act out, sooner or later they're in trouble. They're suspended. We deal with the pipeline from the school to the jail and it creates a bad situation for our community. We don't need to keep compounding. And really, tests are designed to measure. You don't need test to measure when teachers are already measured in the classroom. So I think sometimes it's just another way to make money. And we give a sweetheart deal to people who create tests, and we continue to have a negative impact on our systems. Also.
Thank you. Ms. Ricks.
Testing is the one reason that I decided to run for school board. I do have a company that we do private tutoring, and I have parents and students that come in all the time that do that. I've been a teacher for 15 years, and I teach high school math for years. And my big thing, that my biggest problem with testing is, you know, first of all, the cost it is to our county, that we have. Of our budget, 0.3% of our money is federal money. 0.3% of our budget comes from the federal government. If we could get rid of testing, that would take away almost value that 0.3%. Now, we don't want to completely get rid of it because we do have to have some sort of testing. There's nothing wrong with having a test. We do need to see how our students do, but when we're saying that you can't pass or fail based on the test, then that needs to go. I'm very, very familiar with the Algebra 1, geometry, the upper math ones. And here's the problem. When they first brought it out, only 20% of our students passed it. So students would get 100 in the class, an A, and they couldn't pass the test, so they couldn't pass the class. On no level is that fair. And then when I have students that come in and tutor with me, and I did 6 hours of tutoring, mostly with kids who need summer school because they couldn't pass the test and we have to pass our PERT so we can get credit for this class. When they come in, most of them do not have a textbook of any type. They have no point of reference. So here we are, we're requiring them to take a test for biology or algebra one. They're not allowed, they don't have a textbook. So of course we say that it's more, they have digital textbooks, but you know, the county has to pay every year for a license on a digital textbook. We could save money if we all had textbooks that they could take home over a five-year period and only renew our textbooks every 5 years. So it's unfair to students because they have no point of reference to study for. They're given a handful of papers that they take home and they lose and they don't have. So testing across the board needs to be revamped.
Ms. Cunningham.
Thank you. Okay, there are two different types of testing that we have in our school district. And I know everybody's sick and tired of testing. I get that. I hear it from students. I worked with students this past year to try to address the issue. And let me just tell you where the district is at as a point of reference. No, I'm not in favor of testing. I don't think anybody is. Go into an ESC classroom at Roosevelt Academy and watch a child try to take a test, an algebra exam, and bang their head against the wall or against the desk until it starts to bleed. Yes, we have issues with testing, but some of it comes from the state, and so I want to explain that real quick. The EOCs are state mandated. They aren't statute. That's not something that we can just do away with. We're required to give those out, and as she pointed out, there are subjects like algebra, geometry, civics, and others. Then we created the EOYs, and they were supposed to be for those classes in which the state didn't have the end of course exam. What we're moving to now, which I'm very excited about because it was what we had when I was a child, or in high school, I should say, many moons ago, is a midterm and a final. So our district has been working, negotiating through our PEA to have teachers involved in setting the questions up for midterms and setting them up for the final exams. So basically, you would have 2 9-week periods. We're working towards ending our semesters before Christmas, and you would have the first 2 9-weeks, and then you would have a midterm, and you would get a half a credit, and then you would have the second 2 9-weeks after the winter break, and you would take your final exam, and that would be a half a credit. Those two then would be averaged out for a final grade, rather than what we've been doing, which is having an end-of-year exam that covers things that were started back in October, which is really difficult. I mean, for kids, even myself, to remember what you did back in October to take the exam. My daughter just went through that, and I recognize how that feels. So we are moving forward in that direction, and I'm excited about that. No, it's not the end-all answer, but it's certainly a lot better than it is. And I'm excited that our teachers in the district are being part of all those assessments. And then we're also beta testing alternative assessments. Thank you. Can I finish my sentence? We're beta testing for alternative assessments in which are hard to measure courses like theater, like speech and language pathologist, and so forth. So we're working on that coming up this coming year. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Next we have Mr. Smith.
Well, you know, I was in the Polk County school system for 16 years, and I can tell you, I believe in tests. You've got to have a measurement to it. You need to know what your students are learning. You need to know how you're teaching. It's
It's an evaluation for you as a teacher as well as a student. Now, having said that I believe in tests, you can overdo anything. I love steak and lobster, but I don't want it every day. It's too much. And I think the complaints I'm hearing from teachers are, I don't have time to teach because every time I turn around, they're either taking a test or I've got to prep them for a test. All the enrichment things are gone because there's no room for that anymore. We've got to get ready to test. The obvious thing to do, and I'd like to be a part of that conversation for sure, is to sit down and look at the test you're taking throughout the year. See how many tests these kids are taking. Look at them, see what ones they really need, and let's get rid of the rest of them. We're over-testing. That is the greatest complaint I hear from teachers, bar none, everywhere I go. We're testing too much. We just test. It's out of control. And we need to take advantage of the opportunity to sit down and set priorities and see what they need to know. Every child from Polk County school system does not need to be an expert in algebra. I'm sorry, but they don't. Okay? Some need it, some people don't. And that's just the way that is. And we need to be smart enough to figure that out. Now we've got an end of year test in phys ed. What do you do with an end of year test in phys ed? See how fast you can walk around the track? I don't know what they test. It's just out of control. Everybody's got to take a test. I don't care who you are, I'm going to take a test. I think we need to take a test about some of these tests. It's out of control. We need to sit down and look for the test, and we need to prioritize tests.
Great. Thank you very much. Next up is Mr. Kiddo.
Need to let the teachers tell us what they need to test on. I think the teachers are the ones in the classroom. They're the ones that have the students. They know how the students come prepared to see us. We should have a teacher committee telling us what they need to test on. Has anybody seen the test results and what they do with the test results? You ask for them, but you nobody knows what they use them for. But they're on somebody's shelf gathering dust. So I think you just need to go back to the teachers because they are in the field every day knowing what they need. And you should listen to them. That's all we need to do with testing. Thank you.
All right. Ms. Reynolds.
Well, I think it's obviously important to track the progress of students, our testing's out of control. If you look at the Polk County School Board testing calendar, there's 40 days out of our 180. That's almost the entire last quarter. Why are we testing the entire last quarter? When, how are we getting grades that aren't, what are you teaching during that quarter if you're always testing? Like you talked about with the end of the year exams, we're doing them for electives. And it's not saying, okay, do you know stage right, stage left in theater? It's, can I hear you? That if you have a kid that comes in and can't look you in the eye the first day, and she's in front of her class talking at all, who cares if you can hear her? She's talking. These electives are supposed to be to encourage kids to do things like PE and theater and art. What are we doing if we're telling them, okay, you can't get an A in this class because you can't run an 8-minute mile? Who's going to want to take PE when it's an elective? That's you aren't going to try new things and do new things if you're going to be tested and penalized for not succeeding for trying.
Thank you very much. Dr. James.
Well, let's breathe a little bit on this because everybody keeps talking about testing. Let's talk about how we got to this point. We never had results. That goes all the way back from 2005, 2006, 2007. If you check your newspaper, you'll notice an alternative school out of the testing of Donnie Woods and Bill Duncan actually beat some of the high schools and middle schools during that time period. Anybody like to see that, they can see me anytime. It's in the newspaper. Testing is not something that we should be doing all the time. Now, me being an old alternative student and having alternative schools, I don't believe that a person gets frustrated over a test. But I do believe over-testing a person will make them frustrated but that doesn't determine whether or not you're going to be an alternative student or not. We really need to go back, just like one of my colleagues said, is that we need to go back to the expertise. The expertise is the student and the teacher. Inside that classroom, I've been a teacher. I've been a principal. I've been a superintendent. So I understand about gathering those statistics. But when we had the last superintendent, that was the whole motive. Test every day, test every day, test every day, so we can get statistics. We should have been had those statistics. We shouldn't have put our teachers under that pressure, let alone our students. We have allowed this to overtake, trying to keep up with China and whoever else out there that we get these consultings, like a lot of my colleagues said, we get these consulting remarks, and they tell us that we are to keep up with whoever else left and right. We need to pay attention to our students. We need to understand what they are learning and how we can better teach them. If they cannot be taught inside that classroom under the material that the teacher provides, then we need to find alternatives. Because right now, half of this testing is going to make our... Can I finish my sentence? Thank you very much. It won't be that long. We need to make sure that we keep our students to a point where they're not dropping out. Because our dropout is at 30,000 last year. No matter, nobody wants to look at it. It's 30,000. So we need to make sure that we don't overtest to make it separate, but call people. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take your time,
Ms. Troutman.
Testing, I mean, it's something that everybody gets passionate about, and I think, as looking at it from a perspective of being in the schools, we need testing. We need to be able to measure progress. I think any teacher out there wants to know if what they're doing is effective. We have end of year, end of course exams, and we also have tests that we need to do to monitor student progress. What we do with that testing and the amount of testing can be up for debate, and I think that's really where we sit now and looking at that. We have some testing that is mandated not only by the state for end of year, end of course, but we have to do teacher evaluations. Per statute, we have to have a way to measure teacher evaluation, which has to factor in student growth. If we want to take some of the subjectivity out of teacher evaluations and people being fearful of being, you know, retaliatory action taken against them, we need some data to look at. The amount of testing, I do believe that our district does, is a little bit over and beyond what is mandated by statute. But I think we need to look at, number one, what do we need this testing for? We should be using our test to inform our instruction, work with our teachers in the classroom to understand what is needed to inform their instruction. And if we are teaching towards standards, we are not teaching to a test. If that teacher, we give her the respect as a professional to teach towards the standards, then at the end of the year, end of the semester, when they take the test, it isn't test prep. It's demonstrating your knowledge. And I think teachers would like to be treated as professionals and not micromanaged to understand that this is what I am to teach. I have the freedom to teach that, and at the end of the semester, if I've done my job, the students will perform.
Time. Thank you. And wrapping up this topic, Mr. Townsend.
I brought a prop. This is the Polk County testing calendar. As you can see, it's like 3 feet tall with a lot of little spreadsheets. This is what pointless complexity looks like. Pointless complexity is the enemy of education. It's the enemy of all organizations, really. This stuff here is all Polk mandated. We could do away with that tomorrow, and we should. The larger question in my campaign, you're going to hear me talk a lot about how we experience education, because we've forgotten that. And the testing stuff is at the core of how education is being experienced by teachers, by parents. It is certainly, there are issues with the state, and I want to deal with those issues, but the experience here in Polk County is uniquely bad because of this indifference. The person who is in charge of our testing program spent a week during the key testing window partying at a top conference in Chicago and Washington, D.C. 2 years in a row. She traveled 45 times in the last 18 months, doing nothing about improving the Polk testing experience. There's nobody in charge of the Polk testing experience. Someone needs to be in charge of it. And if I'm elected, we will put somebody in charge of making sure things work. It's not just the tests we're doing that are punitive and don't make sense. It's that the punitive tests we're taking that don't make sense don't work. There's no, the communications are inconsistent, they're contradictory. We need to have an entirely revamped Polk experience.
All right, moving from one challenging topic to another, we have our next question, which will be answered first by Ms. Riggs. And the question. On the desk of President Harry Truman, there was a sign that read, "The buck stops here." As a school board member, the proverbial buck stops on your desk, which means that the development, implementation, and outcome of policies is your responsibility. With more than 13,000 employees in the Polk County School Board system, how will you approach organizational management, and what is your leadership style?
You know, one of the my main thoughts on leadership is how you run a classroom. You know, when you have a classroom, rules without relationship breed contempt. If I don't have a relationship with the student, they're going to resent me, and they're only going to do it because they have to. Right now, we run our school board, and we don't have a relationship with the people underneath us. No matter what you do, no matter where you go, if you don't have a relationship with those people, it's going to cause resentment. So what has happened in our school board is kind of like my husband's a computer programmer. If I go to his job and say, everything that you do, you need to have, I don't know, I'm not a programmer, but you have to have 10 lines of code every time you write a program. And so that's how I do, because if I saw a program and it had a whole bunch of lines of code, I would think that's a great program. But in the reality is, the smaller amount of code you have, the better qualified that programmer is, because he can write that code in a shorter line. Okay, but for me, I don't know that. I'm not a programmer. I would think, oh, look, they wrote this big thing. So that's what's happened in our school board. That's what happened is we say, oh, look, from up here, it looks great, because we don't have people who are actually in classrooms. It's very important to have business people in our school board, but it's also very important to have people who have been in a classroom in the last 10 years, okay? Recently, every day. So it's very different than somebody, school, I've been out of college for 15 years. School is very different now than it was 15 years ago. Okay, our classrooms are very different. So we have to be able to, in anything, you have to build a relationship with the people underneath you. And I know I only have a few seconds, but I want to say this about testing, revisit testing, I know we talked about it. There's a very big difference in testing when we're talking about just giving a test in the classroom. You know, I teach and I give a test every 3 weeks so that I know that my students know what I'm doing. I give a quiz every week because otherwise they're going to be lost in Algebra 1, Algebra 2 if they don't know what's in it. Okay, we're not talking about testing on that. We're talking about federal mandated testing that is saying you cannot pass a class if you don't pass tests. And that's how you finish the sentence.
All right. Reynolds.
I think my parents always taught me that you have two ears and one mouth because you should listen twice as much as you talk. I think that as a public official, you should be listening. You're elected to represent your community. So being on the school board means representing the community, whether it's teachers or students or principals or just your average Joe on the street that doesn't have anyone in his school but cares about the educational system. They all have opinions that are important, and you may have a conversation with someone and realize that, wow, that's genius, that I don't know the answers to everything. So I think part of leadership is knowing that people are trying to help you, that you have to be willing to listen to other people, and realizing that, you know, we're the watchdogs for education, but we also, people that are telling us things are trying to help us.
Thank you very much. Next, Robert Clark.
How about approach organization management and leadership? I'm a military officer. I've served as a retail store manager, served as a pastor of the church, counselor. In each phase of leadership, I've used the the same basic philosophy. It is to empower people to be their best. Put them in atmosphere that's conducive to them carrying out their purpose and their passion. That's what I would like to see happen on the school district. And in doing so, we have to understand, as we try to empower people, we have to have a relationship with them. Build a relationship so that we understand what they're going through in the classroom. As a school board member, we are policy writers. It's hard to write a policy about a system you've never been in. And too often, that's what we have sitting on our boards. And so if you hadn't been in a system, then at least you ought to try to get in your relationship with the experts in the system. I've been in the system. I'm married to a teacher. I go to bed every night for 9 months with students. I think teachers are some of the most wonderful people that we have on the face of the earth. Because they give up and beyond the call of duty. You have teachers who are contracted for maybe 7.5 hours, but they spend 9 hours prepared and doing the work of the teacher. As I close this, I watched my wife and I told her she'd be a good teacher. She suffered through breast cancer. She went through the radiation, she went through the chemo, and the whole time she was trying to find a way to get back to the classroom. Not because she needed the money, but because she wanted her students to excel. That's the type of student teaching we have in Polk County. Not just her, she's not the extreme example, she's the norm. We have excellent teachers, and sometimes we mistreat them. Can I finish my sentence? We have not managed well, because we had resources and we could have given them these, and we wait till the last month of the year to even finish their contract. It shows disrespect in our leadership. And all we're gonna be able to change that is some changes in leadership in the board.
Thank you.
Mr. Kiddo.
I think you started with a quote, the buck stops here. I think there's a misconception with the board and the superintendent. In the school system, the buck stops at the superintendent. And the board can only deal with the superintendent. The board cannot deal with a principal teacher because of the rules and regulations of the board. We're an elected body to represent the public to the school board. For the school board, and our responsibility is to the superintendent. We have to have a relationship with the superintendent where all of us, not just four, but seven of us, can get that superintendent motivated. She is like a coach of a baseball team or a basketball team. She has to be able to get out there and get the morale of the teachers back to where it should be. I think we have lost that. We have lost that communication and that feeling with the superintendent and the teachers that she has to deal with on the day and the principals. So until we can reestablish that, and she feels comfortable with the board feels comfortable with her, then we should be letting the superintendent get out into the classroom, not do all these testing things, etc., and hit the teachers' morale back, because it should be there, really and truthfully. If you look at Grady Judd, when there's a problem, Grady Judd gets out there, gets in front of the public, and tells them how he's going to fix it. Our superintendent has never been in the TV or in the newspaper saying how good our students are. We need to change that. She needs to be the voice of the Polk County School Board, and she's not. And that's a problem, a big problem that I see.
Thank you. Mr. Townsend?
Well, it's fair to Superintendent Bird. I mean, I think she's repeatedly put the spotlights of herself in her doing excellent kids recently. I mean, that's stuff that she's trying to do and has gotten out quite a bit. I don't think that's a necessarily fair criticism of her. But put that aside for right now. I think my values in the organization are honesty and directness and good faith. And this relates to the first question I answered too, which is the indifference to not only the money that the LIIS is cost, but the function of what it was supposed to do. The indifference to having a strategic plan for technology being developed without an RFP. The indifference to you know, to just casually throw away $3.5 million to fight our own teachers for nothing. I mean, that's a culture and an attitude being set by our school board attorney, by a number of top officials in the school district right now. We have to be honest about that, and we have to confront that. We have to create a culture of service and responsiveness to everybody. In addition to that, my background is I'm a reporter. I write a lot, and I've come to realize how giant education is. I mean, this is just one tiny piece of the complexity. You can spend hours and hours and hours going through and not learn at all. You need a reporter on that board, and I will be that for you. I'm going to ask the question nobody wants asked, that nobody is asking now, and I'm going to tell you what the answers are in a way that nobody's doing. And information is power. Right now, we're pretty powerless because there's no information flowing around.
Thank you.
Mr. Sedlin. Oh, thank you. Rep, I thought I was talking there for a minute. I heard all this stuff, but I also, as you probably know, was in the Navy for 28 years. I started off as a seaman recruit and retired in the zone for lieutenant commander. I've been there. I have some idea about what leadership is all about, how it works. And another thing, you talk about your wife dealing with cancer, I'd like to introduce my wife Barbara back here. She taught for 26 years and had to retire because she was diagnosed with multiple myeloma. She's been fighting that for 16 years now. And loved teaching and hated to stop and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, when you stop and look at it, the school board has two people to work for. The superintendent and the county attorney, school board attorney. That's all. Okay? Now, you have got, as a board, you have got to set policy direction for the superintendent and for the attorney. And when he gives you advice, by the way, you better listen to it. It's one of the things you need to do. You've got to make sure he's doing his job. You've got to make sure the superintendent's doing his job. The captain of an aircraft carrier does not need to know what Seaman Jones is doing down in the hold. It's not his job. He needs to know what the executive officer is doing. And if that XO is doing his job, the ship will run fine. If he's not doing his job, we got a problem. Okay? That means you got to pick the right executive officer, don't you? You got to pick the right superintendent. I can guarantee you, when I'm on that board, that I'm going to make sure that we pick the right person for superintendent of schools of Polk County. That we do our homework, that we check our background, we make sure this is the person that we want here to drive this school system forward. That's what we want to do. And I want to make sure we do that, and I will make sure we do that. We need to do our homework as a board to set proper policy and make sure we got the right guy in there. Okay?
Thanks.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. Ms. Scott.
Leadership. I would say that most people in this county would feel that Polk County Schools have lacked a lot of leadership, both in the area of the superintendent as well as the board. And when I think about leadership, what my style would be and how I try to run every facet of my life, whether I'm leading my child or a group of people, and don't ask of others what you would be unwilling to do yourself, or particularly in this case, I'm not going to ask of teachers or of students to do something that I wouldn't want done with my own child. When my child is sitting in that classroom and experiencing these things, it becomes very real. As a parent, that it's no longer just, oh, well, that's a policy that's being made. So I think as a leader, we really have to encourage what I see right now, because of the morale and where we are, we have a climate of compliance. Everybody is complying with what must be done, including the kids. I've got to do this, and I'm going to comply. We need an environment where we have commitment from the teachers, commitment from the parents to be involved in their children's education, and commitment from the board to reach out and develop those relationships. Yes, we set the policy, but a lot of the questions that were posed to us from this forum as we were preparing for this are questions that you would say, well, it's down in the weeds. You know, we don't discipline the teachers. We don't discipline the administrators, but there has to be a level of knowledge about what your policy looks like when it's implemented in order to be a good policymaker. And I think that as a board, we have to really begin to understand what our classrooms look like, what the testing environment looks like. As Billy said, what does the experience look like from all the stakeholders, as a parent, as a teacher, and as a student? And right now, I would say that that is not an environment where the teachers are happy, most of the parents aren't happy, and a lot of our students aren't happy, and that needs to change.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our board member's role is basically, as we've talked, approving a balanced budget and setting policies and decisions for our school district. We actually have four employees, not two. We employ the superintendent of schools. We employ a secretary that works for the school board. We employ a school board auditor, and we employ our attorney. So those four individuals do report directly to the seven board members. So as a board member, I view myself, besides that, as a liaison to the community and our staff. I don't make recommendations on hiring or dismissing employees. It's simply not my place. I've never done it, and I never will. There's a very fine line there between being a board member and getting involved in the day-to-day operations. And we as board members should not do that. That is not our place. However, in being a community liaison, we do work together. There's been many circumstances where a teacher or a parent or students have called and asked for some help in different areas. And I've always tried to work quietly with those individuals to resolve those issues. One of those we talked about earlier was testing. I had several young people call me this past January about the testing schedule. And so here we are trying to move it forward in a different direction because of that. Part of this question that was sent to us was also about priorities. I mean, here we are talking about a school system, and I know there's been challenges, and I hear all the comments that have been said here tonight, but there's a lot of great things going on in Polk County schools. And I think most of you, I think, would hopefully agree with that. But we have a way to go. Are we there yet? No, of course not. But we're trending in the right direction. I wanted to give my priorities. Okay, next time. Thank you.
All right. In wrapping up this topic, Dr. James.
Ooh. Organizational management. I've taught this subject. Salvation, Nunez, Miami-Dade. I've been involved in organizational structure. Just like my veterans up here, I am prior military, retired military, so I do understand. We have a problem with transparency, and we do not look at our organization as a Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If we do not pay attention to those that need needs, then we can't have an organizational structure. I've ran schools. I did a lot of charter schools, a lot of private schools, worked in the public school system. And I've been a superintendent in DODEA, Department of Defense Education Activities. They don't call them superintendents, but they call them education chiefs. It's a superintendent because you're over a whole bunch of schools. The problem that we have is that our people that we get for superintendent, they don't have the experience. And we don't have anybody on the board that has that experience. They don't understand about being in the classroom. They don't understand about running a school. All of it is for a facade. We need somebody on this school board that is going to give them exactly what the teachers need and also what the principals need and also what the superintendent needs. You can't govern a person that's at the top of a hierarchy and they have no idea what's going on in there with the troops. You gotta know what's going on inside the classroom. They have no idea. We have plenty of business people, oh, absolutely. But what educators? So for my teachers that's in here, or my past teachers in here, let's get those people in there. let's place somebody on the school board, because you haven't had one since I've been here, that was a true educator, a superintendent. So that superintendent will know, you can't give me some wigwash and I have to vote on it. Or you're looking for guidance, I can give you guidance. Our superintendent hasn't reached out to Hillsborough. Our superintendent hasn't reached out to Orange. They haven't done it because I've already talked to those superintendents. We're in a superintendent pool, so I know what moves are being made. So we need to make sure that we put someone and put a group of people on here that understand what the school board needs. Thank you, ma'am. I saw you.
All right, and now we're going to move on to our last broad question. So this will start with Ms. Rubens. Okay. So as Mr. Kiddo mentioned and suggested a few moments ago, for many reasons, and some of which are ones we've discussed already this evening, teacher morale is at an all-time low. Good, well-qualified, and critically trained teachers are leaving the profession in droves. In May of this year, the Polk County School Board held a job fair to offer incentives and bonuses to fill 950 open positions. What is your stance on the micromanagement and morale of teachers, and what will you do to improve the climate for our teachers?
I think teacher retention is important. Wanting new young graduates to come in and teach here for 30 years is important. Publix posted an article several years ago called Lessons from Our Founder. And one of George Jenkins' lessons, six lessons, is respect the dignity of the individual. This is a quote from that article. He valued his associates and their opinions, and he knew that the respect that they had for each other would reflect in the service provided to customers. The respect that we have for our teachers and the respect that the administration has for our principals and our teachers and our students trickles down. If the teachers feel that they're respected and that they're valued, that's how they're going to treat their classrooms. So I think it's important that we're making sure that our teachers know how much we value them. Our students and our teachers are our greatest assets, and we need to treat them as such.
Thank you. All right, Ms. Fritz.
As a teacher, again, it goes back to a respect. You know, if you don't feel valued, you're not going to give value. People who feel valued give value. Teachers as a whole, statistically, don't last more than 3 years. 50% of teachers don't make it past the third year. The 50% are left, only 50% of them make it past 5 years. It's a lot of work. It's not just paperwork. So now what we've done is we've given teachers and given them more responsibility. We're not just giving them the job of teaching our students, but we're having to stay up with state mandates. We're giving more and more and more paperwork. And I think the reason is, for the amount of time that you put in, you don't feel that you're getting the personal value from that. With that being said, like if no one who has not taught understands what it's like to be a teacher. I mean, you really work 80 hours a week, every week, and you're not just doing it because of the money you get. You do it because you're trying to help someone and have the joy of seeing someone learn. And I think, and I don't want to be a basher, but when Ms. Cunningham said that, you know, it's not their job to see the day-to-day, but that's the whole point. If you don't understand the day-to-day, how are you going to be able to manage something that you don't understand the day-to-day of? I mean, in my own business, I can't help them anymore if I don't know. You know, one of the main reasons I left and started my own school was because I was tired of having a principal that hadn't ever taught math telling me how to teach math. Look, I know what I'm doing. You know, if you're going to hire me for a job, let me do my job. So our teachers need to feel like, look, you are professionals, and I think that's the biggest part. We don't tell our teachers that you are a professional and value their professional opinion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Professor James.
Well, this goes over into a lot of issues with our teachers. Some things you all do not know. is that the county, or the school board, has awarded a lot of contracts, $3.2 million, $1.5 million, another $2.2 million, to contracted schools. What happens is that they employ our teacher, then they let our teachers go, and then they bring in their own teachers because it's contracted. We don't have any governing. Teachers get upset and sick and tired of being walked over. There's no room for advancement. When was the last time we heard about the principal pool? When's the last time we had the assistant principal pool? Or when's the last time we had the training for the principal's pool? You haven't heard any of that. They're not going to do it. We have people that have sat in teachers' positions that 10 years, 11 years, and never get the opportunity for advancement. So why not go to Orange? Why not go to Hillsborough? That's what's going on. Then we place substitutes on a long list and make a contract with Kelly Services. And then Kelly pulls out of the contract. So now that leaves our people, because we can't travel to Orange, we can't travel to Hillsborough, I want to work right here in Polk. We don't utilize them correctly. Now another point is our IEPs. We don't put our teachers in there that are supposed to be assisting our students that have IEPs. We just throw them inside of a classroom and allow them to just sit. And now the kids get frustrated, you have disruption, and there's no attention to detail in there. So before I get time, I just want to say, we need to make sure that we take care of our teachers. But I hope, thank you for yielding to me, sir. No micro, no macroing the teachers. Allow them to do their job. Learn what they came in there to do, a passion for. It's a passion to be a teacher. And it's a love and a respect for students and success. If you don't have it, you shouldn't be in the classroom. And if you don't have it and you don't want it, you shouldn't be on the school board or a superintendent or a district personnel. Thank you.
It's turning into something now. I don't know
what. I got a little heated. I apologize. I get like that. I'm glad you gave me the first question because I was a little soft.
Ms. Cunningham.
Thank you. I believe that, and I've always said, you can have the best facilities, the best textbooks, the newest technology out there that money can buy. But if you don't have the right teacher in the classroom leading those kids, we don't have anything. So I have the utmost admiration and respect for our teachers, our support personnel that work with our kids every single day. Because as I always believe, the magic begins when the classroom door closes. And that is leadership in our schools. The leadership starts at the top. And while it is our administrators and others, the most important leader in our schools is that teacher in the classroom. So I wholeheartedly support our teachers and the wonderful things that they are doing. And there are so many notable experiences from this past year. The teachers have changed lives one child at a time. I've supported vehemently our teacher raises. I know it probably wasn't where we would like it to be, but to be able to do that as quickly as we did and to have it in the paychecks at the end of May, before the summer break, was a struggle, but with negotiations, we were able to get that accomplished. I support our teachers being involved in writing the assessment questions, as I said earlier, to be a part of that so that we can measure our students' progress mid-year and at the end of the year. And having them be a part of that process, to me, is so very important. I support teachers' autonomy. I believe that they should be given the information that needs to be taught. What is the expectation? And I believe we need to get our hands out of it and allow the teacher to teach it with her or his own personal style and what works for them best, because nobody knows what works for an individual except the person who is doing it. And I feel that at the end of the day, the effectiveness of the students and what has been learned and gained will be shown, and I believe it will be a win-win situation for all. So I respect our teachers. Thank you.
Ms. Troutman.
The micromanagement of teachers is a real issue, and I think it's not only the micromanagement of teachers, but it trickles, if you want to say up or down, however you want to phrase it. And it has to start with understanding that we have to communicate. Our district has an enormous problem with just communicating what our expectations are of teachers. Over the past 3 years, I've probably been in about half of the schools here in Polk County. And I can tell you, you walk in one classroom to one campus and you ask a question and the teacher will give you the answer that they believe is what they're supposed to be doing because that's what they've been told by their administrator, only to go to another school and hear that those teachers are being directed to do something else. So I think our teachers, first of all, would like to have the communication awarded to them as a professional to say, here's what we're charging you with to do. And go and do it. And I think then that also then reflects back to our administrators that they understand the needs of their campus and then hire the people that are able to be leaders to have the faith and to put into place the right teachers in those classrooms that meet the needs of their client. Because from the school, maybe go to Valley View and we go over, you know, to Garner. It's much different clientele. What I need in a teacher at Garner is very different than what I might need a teacher at Valley View. And I think we have to look back at our administrators that we're hiring to then put the right people in place in those classrooms and to let them teach as they know how to teach and to hold them accountable for that just as we do all of our other professions and not tell them that, A, you have to open the book to page 20 today, and after page 20, then I need you to go back to page 6. And do page 6 because we forgot about telling you to go to page 6. But that is some of the micromanagement that we do see, and I don't think it's because anybody wakes up and says, I want to lead our students astray, but we're being reactive instead of proactive.
Thank you. Mr. Smith?
I want to leave you with one thought that I've had hammered into my head through my teacher training, and that is, they may not care how much you know, but they don't know how much you care. That's the relationship between the teacher and the student, and that has to be established after it's all over with. What's the reward of teaching? I'll tell you what, it's certainly not that paycheck. That's not it. Anybody who is teaching school for the money needs to go talk to somebody. That's the problem. That's not what it's about. I'll tell you what it's about. I got my payday. My biggest one about 6 months ago. My wife and I walked into the Longhorn restaurant in Winter Haven. And there was a young man sitting there with his wife and two kids. And we sat down and he said, "Mr. Smith, do you know me?" I said, "No." He said, "You were my teacher at Auburndale High School. You were the best teacher I ever had." There was my payday. There was my payday right there. Okay? That's the glory of teaching. That you feel like you have made a difference in a student's life. And that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. Teachers need to feel that they are important. They need to feel that they're evaluated properly. They need to make those they're making a difference. When they get so much pressure from over their heads to test and test and test, and we're going to base your pay on what you're testing, how your students perform, etc. That's all crazy. They need to have a relationship with their kids, and the kids need to know that. And I'll tell you what, something happens in there. You remember about the second or third grade, what do kids do when they go into the classroom first thing in the morning? They hug their teacher. By the time they're in sixth grade, they want to slug their teacher. What happened? But anyway, this is all about making the system work. And you got people all the way down and it works. Give me one more second, okay? We were talking about George Jenkins a while ago, and he said several things. One of the things he said, never take a donkey to the Kentucky Derby. Okay? Hire good people and make sure they do their job. That's all you have to do. Okay? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Townsend.
So I'm actually on an optimistic note. I think in the removal of Capitol Roy a couple of months back, we positioned ourselves to take advantage of what's a very interesting political moment statewide and nationwide. I think all parties, left, right, center, all ideologies are ready to put children and their well-being and the core interaction of education back at the heart of what we do in our class. I think we realize we've gone too far. I think there's going to be great opportunities to confront the state intelligently and safely in the coming years. And I will absolutely be helping to do that. But what I'm realizing now is until we change our culture at our district office and to a culture of creativity and service and responsiveness, we're just not living up to the level of teaching that's going on in our best schools. We've got two parents of public school kids in this room tonight who are at MIT right now. We've got Auburndale High that sent a kid to Princeton. We've got Lakeland High that sent a kid to Harvard last year. I think I saw the young man this morning that 10th Interact High took from an abandoned child, and he's going to college for the first time. There is nothing wrong with Polk County education that cannot be fixed by what's right in it. And but the truth is, and with respect to Roy, it's going to take much more assertive, aggressive leadership at the board level than what you guys have been providing. When you're passive, you get what you get.
Mr. Kiddo.
I'm going to be very short and brief. I gave a minute to you, sir. I agree with everything you say. This is Troutman. I agree with everything that you say. The only thing that intrigued me is, why does a teacher have to go to Bartow office to make more money? I am a firm believer they should be able to make that money in the classroom. And it annoys me that the best teachers out of the classroom and send them to Bartow to get more money. You should say, we'll get
the
just stay in the
classroom.
Thank you.
And wrapping everything up, Reverend Clark.
Okay. In micromanagement, you steal the creative flow that teachers have. And then you're doing curriculum mapping, and you got a unique situation in your classroom, but you don't get a chance to use your creativity to bring those kids from where they are to where they need to be. Because now you got to be with them now to say, you have to. You got great recovery. You have some kids that learn the system, beat the system, defy the system.
Yes,
know that they can go all 9 weeks long, and at the end of the period, that you're going to have to come and give them a passing grade, give them information, micromanaging the students, and great recovery. And so you micromanage it, you take the creativity out of the teacher. It was amazing watching. My wife started to teach, and she'd come home, and she'd be on the computer. Come here, let me show you what I'm going to teach tomorrow. This is a great way. And as the time goes by, sooner or later, you see the system, and it bleeds us. The creativity, the joy, the passion out of the teacher. Because I can't do this now, because now we have a new test. You've got to get them in this window. If you don't get them in this window, you can't get picked. And so you micromanage. And then, what I thought was the biggest insult, she and I were going into the reception with the new superintendent. And one of the 9 people that sit on the board, or sit on the stage, the teachers were there, stated that they needed their contract ratified. And one of the 9 people that sit on that stage said they ought to be glad they just have a job. She asked me, did you hear that? I said, yes, I did hear that. I'm sorry that's the way the district feels. That deals with a morale problem in our school system. When I was on the school board in Pensacola, I went there for the purpose of making the school district better. We went through the budget with a fine-tooth comb. We gave the teachers the largest raise they had in Camden County. give them a wrap. The levels went up. Okay, give me 1 minute. And we saw the morale of the teacher go up because they knew that the board was fighting for them because they valued them as teachers. It's not the amount of money they make. It's the knowing that your employee, your employer, and that value what you do, support what you do, and will fight for you to get the best that they can. They know the resources are limited, but at least fight for me with the best of your ability so that I can get the best opportunity to serve you.
Thank you.
All right. That's all of our questions for tonight. So let's give our candidates one more round of applause. In addition to the questions that the candidates already responded to, there were some additional questions that didn't nicely fit into the broad categories that we created for tonight. So we have asked all of the candidates, including the ones that weren't able to make it tonight, to respond to those questions in writing. And so we will be posting those on the CBEL Facebook page.
Yes.
As a Google Doc. And Dr. Bradshaw will also be emailing those out to anyone on the mailing list. So that's the Citizens for Better Educational Leadership on Facebook. You should be able to, you'll be able to access those. I think she said by Sunday she'll have those posted.
And give it up for Wendy Bradshaw.
In addition, as long as the audio and video worked all right, for tonight, we'll also have those posted. We'll have the links on the CBEL Facebook page as well, so you can go back and listen to it, or if you just want to take any still shots of the candidates or anything, to put it your back from on your phone, that's great. So we wrapped it just a little bit early, so we'll use this time as a candidate so that you can meet and greet, and you, if you have any questions or want to talk with your candidates individually, that will be perfect. Thank you all for coming tonight. Really appreciate it.